Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Allison.
Yes.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
On tonight's show, I'm going to be talking with Duncan, who came to us all the way from Australia.
He didn't actually come to us.
Via the magic of the internet.
Oh, okay.
And Duncan starts off with this story about this thing his mom sees, which his mom called a ghost.
Was it actually Nick Cave?
No.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe when he was young, he looked like a gray alien.
It's possible.
Yeah. What she described, though, sounds like a gray alien, which is really interesting. And it, you know, Duncan says it like kind of may influence some of these other things he talks about. He talks about living in this haunted house with a bunch of other young people and all this crazy stuff that happened. He's missing time incident, some sleep paralysis, and more. After my talk with Duncan, we are going to read some articles. Duncan mentioned seeing one of these blacker-than-black figures, ghosts maybe. And I thought, well, maybe they've talked about this in the past, and maybe I can dig up some newspaper articles describing this. I couldn't find any. I didn't have a ton of time to look. It's been a pretty busy week as far as editing and stuff. But I did find some articles on ghosts in black, which we often hear ghosts in white and so forth. So we'll be reading those. After Duncan. We'll get to Duncan soon. We have a big thank you. I want to thank Kristen Marie for sending us a wonderful box of chocolate and other candies.
I probably shouldn't admit how much candy we have eaten in the last 24 hours.
It's not been me.
No, but the rest of us have.
I gave up sweets for Lent, so that's
torn through it. So.
The family has been very excited about that, and we do have a vegan in the family.
And it was
enough to include vegan options. Made the whole family happy, and sent other gifts as well.
Yeah, a
Bigfoot bandana and
pins and stickers, all kinds of fun stuff.
Yeah, so thank you so much. It was a wonderful, wonderful box, and the whole family enjoyed it. So.
And the sweet notes that accompany it, I was like a handwritten note. So.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and get to my talk with Duncan. I'm talking with Duncan tonight, who's calling in all the way from Australia. How you doing, Duncan?
Yeah, really good, thanks, man. How you going?
Awesome. I'm excited to get some stories. I really like getting the international stories when we can get them, so thanks for taking the time to do this.
Oh, that's no problem at all, man. I'm really, really pleased to be here.
As comfortable as you are, you can give locations and dates when these things happened.
Yeah, timeline's a little sketchy on a lot of things from my early life anyway. Yeah, so probably first thing I really remember of this kind, it's more stuff that like my mum told me about houses that we lived in when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. So they're not my memories, they're memories of memories or stories that I've been told about places that we lived before I was old enough to remember things. That was just a lot of, you know, in my case, sort of sleep paralysis, night terrors, sleepwalking, that kind of stuff as a little kid. Yeah, that probably my first real memory of something strange, and it sounds ridiculous and it could well be just a false memory or whatever, but was just kind of a fireplace that was in my parents' bedroom when I was a very small child. And I just was obsessed with it. I'd stare at it like that. I could feel like there was something staring back at me out of it. And very often it was like the fire, there was no fire in there. The chimney was blocked off, but I could see a fire in there and it was watching me. And it sounds ridiculous, but as a child, you know, you get this fear of something. Mm-hmm. But in this house, we had a lot of poltergeist sort of stuff, you know, books flying out of bookcases and things moving around. But as I say, this is all when I was very young, before I really have any solid memories. Probably the next thing that would have been was when we lived, we'd moved back from Victoria, which is in the goldfields in one of the eastern states, to South Australia, where we live now, where I live now. And yeah, there was a house we lived in that was just, there's something really, really off about it. People had a lot of accidents there, a lot of shit times, a lot of bad memories of that place. But that was one, again, that was not something I saw, but was something my mum saw that had always, that she told me about. And the way she described it was as a ghost, that it was a short, very pale skin, no legs, just sort of disappeared into, she could only see its upper body, but it was quite short, mm-hmm. oversized head and large black eyes, and a really sick smile on its face when it was looking at her. And when she told me about this at the time, I just, as a young person, she told me this story. I'm like, yeah, sounds like a ghost, right? But I guess in retrospect, I'm thinking on that, it could be a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and the night that this happened, that she saw it as a full apparition, the house was full of people. There was like three other adults in the house and not one of them could wake up. My mum was screaming her head off. She's like shaking her sister, who was next to her, who was staying with us at the time, trying to shake her awake. And she just flopping around, you know, like completely, the whole house was out to it except my mum.
Wow.
And this thing then just smiled at her and just drifted off down the corridor and disappeared. And she got up and ran down to our rooms to check us kids. Yeah, and we moved out of that house pretty soon after that.
Yeah. Wow. The going back to sleep thing or not being able to wake people up, that is, to me, one of the most disturbing aspects of all of this.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I've had a few other things where there's been things that have happened and you just go back to sleep and you think that shouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. I should have been wired, you know, and awake, but you just roll over and go back to sleep. It's one of those things, I guess. But yeah, so those are things that I didn't witness myself, but that are things that happened when I was around as a small child. So yeah, I guess there's probably a longer stretch where I don't really remember much happening after that, up until probably my grandfather died when I was about 15. And we had his ashes in a box that was up in a cupboard next to my little brother's room. And my dad's a great guy, but he's got a really bad memory and he flaked on the time for the memorial service and didn't turn up. So my grandpa's ashes are in the cupboard. All these people turned up for his memorial and my dad didn't turn up with the ashes, which stayed in our cupboard. And it was around that time, and I don't know exactly when this was, but I guess if I was 15, what am I now, 45? So yeah, 30 years ago. Yeah, our dog, little fluffy little, you know, house dog kind of thing, would go down to that end of the house and just stand there and just start shaking and like have like an epileptic fit. She'd fall on the ground and just lie there. But I only ever saw her have those fits near where this cupboard, like next to the cupboard in my little brother's room, where the ashes were. And when my dad got rid of them, yeah, that was the end of that. We had no more epileptic dogs. So
Huh.
Yeah. It's that was something pretty weird.
Yeah, indeed.
And, you know, I kind of got the vibe that he was pretty pissed off, my grandpa, that he'd been disrespected in that way, if you know what I mean.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, wow.
That's what I always thought, because it's like his ashes are sitting right there. And it's like we missed the memorial thing. Well, more to the point, my dad, let's blame him. But, yeah, and it was only during that period. And then after we buried the ashes, there was no more issues with the dog. So, yeah, seemed kind of weird. But, yeah, so, look, it was after that. I moved out of home pretty young, like maybe 16, into a sort of a share house squat kind of an arrangement with some friends. There was a lot of strange things happened in that place. Like, everybody who lived there had a lot of strange things happen to them. Probably the most obvious for me was the smell and the temperature changes that would happen sometimes. And they were very rapid. You'd be sitting there and all of a sudden you just feel cold and there's smell like a mixture of a mold and something dead and shit as well, to be honest. It's one of the foulest smells, and it would just come out of nowhere with this cold. Then it'd just go and you'd be like, everything's back to normal. But yeah. So, I mean, again, that was interesting, but combined with the other things that happened in that house, it made me pretty sure there was, again, something pretty off about the place. Lights switching on and off. When you'd go into the bathroom in the middle of the night, you'd sit down on the toilet and lights would turn off. Lights would turn off just as you sat down. Pitch black in the room. You'd get up to turn them back on. They'd like to come back on their own. That kind of messing with you kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You'd occasionally see, you know, out of the corner of your eyes, shadows on the walls that shouldn't have been there. That was a pretty weird place to live, and probably the strangest thing that happened to me there was doing dishes. And behind you is the oven, so you can see there's a glass on the front of the oven, and in front of you is the window out into the backyard. And at night, you'd sometimes just see somebody walk behind you between the glass reflected in the window and the stove behind you.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see movement. You'd turn around, look over both shoulders. There's nobody there. That happened so often that it was almost like a running joke in the house, you know, like, so who saw what today, you know? Like, it was a very, very creepy place. I lived there for about, I don't know, 2-3 months, and then I moved out because it was just too unpleasant, really, really nasty vibe.
So your roommates were experiencing stuff too there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of my friends, and I mean, I didn't witness this myself, but he claims one night he was hearing this sort of tapping on his door, scratching noises on his door. He went and opened the door. There's nobody home. Closed the door, immediately started hearing tapping on it again. So he pushed his cupboard up against the door, climbed off out the window, and took off down the road. That was, as I say, didn't see that myself, but there was a lot of people who lived there. Everybody who lived there had something strange happen to them.
Hmm.
Again, this would be, I guess, mid-90s, 95 maybe. That place was pretty interesting. Some other interesting things that have happened, and it kind of comes back to the story my mum had said about the ghost she saw. That in retrospect, and having, you know, I'm listening to shows like yours and Where Did the Road Go, and seeing that there does seem to be some crossover with some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not, I was looking at everything that happened in my life as separate phenomenon.
Right, yeah.
That
yeah.
Just, oh, I saw a ghost. I saw some lights in the sky. Whatever it might be. But in retrospect, and having sat down, I guess trying to do a bit of a timeline in preparation to talk to you, there's some stuff that jumped out at me anyway. So probably late teens, I was hanging around with some people who were doing some experimenting with things like remote viewing,
mm-hmm.
I think was the term, you know. What's the thing where you put the, like, a red light on your eyes, dark with red light, so you can, is it Ganzfeld something?
Oh, maybe. I'm not super familiar with it, but yeah, I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with the process.
It wasn't really my thing either. I was sort of hanging around with some guys who were into it, and I had a go at it, at the remote viewing kind of stuff, and actually had some interesting experiences with that. Nothing that you couldn't put down to a bit of luck and a bit of chance or coincidence, but it was interesting time, and we were doing some experience with that, and, you know, the cards with the different symbols on the back.
Yeah.
Where you try to guess the card and things like that. Yeah, that was sort of happening around the time we also decided it would be a good idea to go and try to do some ghost hunting, which was a really stupid idea. and go and sort of try to go to old ruins and places that were reputedly haunted and poke around and get into trouble, basically. there's a stretch, probably the majority of the strange things that happen to me are sort of mid-teens to early 20s. And over a fairly short period, there was a lot of very strange stuff. As I say, when I was 15, 16, there was the haunted house, if you want to call it that, that I lived with in the share house. And then after that, yeah, doing these sort of, in another share house, doing experiments with remote viewing and trying to muck around with that sort of psi stuff, which, as I say, there was some interesting things happened. But it was around that time I had an interesting kind of, a light phenomenon or UFO kind of thing. I don't know what the term is, but, that was just sitting out on a balcony and looking out towards the hills. Yeah, just a line of, orange lights. They look very similar to the sodium vapor kind of lamps that you see on road lights, but they were way up above the hill line in a straight line, just moving along pretty fast in a row along the top of the hills, which are probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles away, the hills, I guess. Mm-hmm. They just sort of slowed down and then just kind of disappeared. Not disappeared in a puff, but like they accelerated and were just gone. Mm. I asked one of my friends who was there and my brother, you saw that, right? And they're like, yeah. But they didn't really seem that perplexed by it. You know, it was just like, yeah, we saw that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, you think that's strange? And then they were like, yeah, I guess. But it didn't seem to really impact them particularly. So I mentioned we did some ghost hunting or whatever you want to call it, paranormal investigation type stuff. And that was, again, around this same sort of a time when we were doing the experiments with remote viewing and a lot of other stuff like that. But yeah, we had probably two that were the most that really stick in my mind. One of them was up at a place called Marble Hill Ruin, which was an old manor house for some wealthy sort of early settlers, really impressive kind of mansion with a tower and stuff like that. And it had been burned down, I don't know, like 100 years ago in a huge big bushfire that went through. So the place had been ruined for a long time. And they'd been going through a process over probably decades of fixing the house, renovating the tower, fixing the whole thing up, and turning it into a tourist attraction. At the time, they'd only rebuilt the main, the main home, but they hadn't rebuilt another section which had a tower on it. That was all still in ruins, except, well, it was partially in ruins anyway, and partially rebuilt. So, yeah, we went up there one night, late afternoon, and we're wandering around up there, and the whole place had a weird vibe, but nothing particularly let that at us. But then as it started getting closer towards the sun going down and we were thinking we probably need to think about moving off reasonably soon, we were walking past the main building, and there was a window there that was, like, all the other windows were dark because it's a dark building, and this was the renovated section. And there was one that was just blacker than black, like black paint or black, like oil on it, you know? Mm-hmm. It wasn't just dark like the other windows. It was dark that drew your eye, you know? And we were standing there staring at it, and I said, that looks really weird, hey, to the guys who were with me. And my friend who was next to me didn't say anything. I looked over, and he was just standing staring off up a gentle hill up behind the house. And standing right up the top of there, there was this very black figure of a man just standing there watching us. And my friend was just standing staring at him like slack-jawed. And I said, Paul, what are you doing, man? Like, and it was like he couldn't hear me. He was just standing there staring for, I don't know, 10 seconds. Might have been a bit shorter, but it felt like a long time, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I've grabbed him and shook his arm, and he's gone, what? You know, what the f*** are you doing? And the guy was gone. The figure on the hill was gone. There was nowhere he could have gone because it was an open, grassy slope. There was nowhere. He's just gone. So then we're thinking, okay, this is a little bit strange. And so we start walking along, trying to go back down the driveway, back towards where the cars were. Then, yeah, there's this tower that I was saying about that was part of the renovation process, which had been partially repaired, partially not, and had some windows right up on the top floor, opened outwards, onto a small balcony at the very top of this thing. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, these windows just swung open like somebody had pushed them open, and there was that same black, blacker than black, inside the window. And it was such strange timing because it was like as we came around the corner and I looked up at the thing, and as I looked up there, these windows are just swung open, and there's that same blackness that was behind the window in the other house. And at that point, we kind of got freaked out and took off running. And it was getting quite dark at this point, like getting towards dark anyway. As we were moving down towards the cars. I spoke to one of my friends within the last few weeks about this in preparation to ask him what his memories of this were. And we both had very similar memories of this part, which is as we were moving down towards where we had our cars, it seemed like fog had come up or smoke that was kind of low hanging to about your waist, you know, mm-hmm. just low to the ground. And then as we were running, both of us saw what looked like a little girl running along next to us, maybe 10 feet off. And she was disturbing. You could see the fog moving. And as I looked over, and then she was gone. And then we got to the gates. We climbed over the gates. We jumped in our cars. And I've never returned. I don't even drive past that place. Huh. My hairs stand on end. They're all standing on end right now. But, I can't even go past that place because it just creeps me out too much, you know. And I spoke to my friend, a few weeks ago, and he said, I remember the little girl. Do you remember the little girl? And I'm like, yeah, man. And, you know, then when we did the research into the place and there was apparently this huge bushfire, and I've tried to do some research, find out if people died in the fire, but I couldn't find anything. And strangely enough, there's no other records of anybody else. I've not heard anybody else have anything happen to them out there, anything strange in that particular place, which, seemed strange to me because there was definitely something very strange happened that night.
The figure you saw on the hill, did you see that and your friend?
We both saw that, yeah.
Were there any details at all, or was it just a black silhouette or something?
It was just a black outline. But in my memory, you know when somebody's aggressive and angry, how they stand with a particular energy, you know, hands on hips maybe, it looked like someone standing who was not happy. But it was purely just a black shape. Mm-hmm. There was no details at all, other than it was a human. It felt like a man, but I couldn't see any details. And it was a full-grown man, so it was a different thing from the little girl that we saw.
Right, yeah. That was my next question. Roughly, grown man-sized, essentially.
Yeah. It would have been a normal sort of size man, 6 foot tall man. Mm-hmm. The little girl was not dark. She just looked like a little girl. I guess washed out, and then you see it out of the corner of your eye, and then as you look, it sort of faded out, and you could see and that was the strange part. This fog. We got back to the car. There was no fog. Hmm. Yeah. There was no smoke. There was nothing. It was a very strange night.
Did you notice any details of the little girl, like clothes or anything, or just basically saw it? I mean,
in my memory, short hair. She had short hair. Mm-hmm. And a little short kind of like I don't know. It looked, I guess the clothes looked out of what I could see from the corner of my eye, not like something you would see somebody wearing nowadays, maybe. It looks fairly like a smock, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, so fairly plain, just a glorified sack, basically. But you know what I mean? Like nothing that I could put my finger on. And, you know, this is all 25 years ago now. So, but I do remember, short hair, and she would have been maybe 4 foot high, I guess, mm-hmm. up to my armpit sort of thing, like short. But that was a strange experience. As I say, I don't even drive down that road because I don't want to drive past this place, and that's 25 years later. So
wow, do they ever reopen it and like finish the work they were doing?
Yeah. I was looking at it again in preparation for talking to you. I went and looked at Google Maps and I looked up had a look at the site. It looks like they've fully renovated it, and it's. Yeah, so that's what I find strange is that I've gone and I've done the Google thing and I can't find anybody else who's had anything particularly strange happen to them there. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know, seems sort of odd to me with a place that to me seems so obviously there was something going on there, but
Yeah, I mean, it could be that people, a lot of times it's hard to get people to talk about this stuff. A lot of people don't want to talk about this stuff, or it could just be the right combination of people was there that day. I don't know, the energy.
I had wondered if it wasn't that as the renovations were happening,
right?
Perhaps that stirring something up.
Certainly.
But then once they were finished and you've had so many thousands of people go through there as tourists now that maybe it's kind of, well, whatever it was irritated. If these things get irritated, was angry at the activity there, mm-hmm. at the renovations, at things being disturbed. But then once the job was finished, perhaps it's not an issue anymore, but so that was one of the ill-fated attempts at paranormal investigations. The other one was is similar. it's was at another site we went to, honestly, just to go and wander around. We were, you know, young guys, just bored, looking for something to do, you know, and we went to a place that's a reservoir on the edge of the city with, I don't know, maybe 100 acres of pine around it. And yeah, we went out there one night and we were just wandering around out there, and it was a full moon, and I was with the same guys that I went with to the other place with, to the Marble Hill ruin. Yeah, we were walking around out there this night. It was a really bright night. I remember the moon was super bright, and we came out into this clearing. And you know when you get those fairy rings of like mushrooms that are all growing in a big ring?
Oh, yeah.
There's one of those in a clearing with this just bright moonlight blasting down into this clearing. As I got to the edge of it, it's just, I don't know, I thought, I should just walk around, you know, not cut through this. And my friend, who's a pretty headstrong guy, he just walked straight through and he kicked the mushrooms over and stomped straight through the middle of the clearing. At that point, we saw I'm not saying it's the same dark figure, but it was had such a similar feel to it, where I looked up a gentle slope to maybe 50 feet away, and there was this black figure standing there. And again, it was that blacker than black, oily looking. And it moved like oil, not like it oozed, you know? It didn't walk. It just sort of shifted and moved.
Wow.
And we all saw it. And I went, Jesus, you see that? And they're like, yeah. At this point, I wasn't sure who or what it was. So, you know, I've got my hunting knife with me. I pull that out. We're going, because maybe it could be a guy, you know, somebody, I don't know. But you get scared, you pull your knife out, you know. But at that point, this thing just stopped, took a step or two, moved sideways to where there was one of these pine trees. And just kind of, all of a sudden, there was just a pine tree there. Hmm. With where its arms had been, there's a couple of branches sticking out. Now, I know this sounds like, oh, well, yeah, it was just the tree all along. But this was not a tree all along. This was something that could make you think that it was a tree. Could sort of disguise itself in plain sight.
Yeah, or use the environment to its advantage somehow.
Yeah, because we went around and slightly up the slope, and you could see there was nothing there. But previously to this thing stepping towards this tree, it was just a straight pine. As we perceived it and we saw it, and we don't know how long it had been standing there watching us. Yeah, it just stepped, sort of oozed sideways, lifted its arms out, and then it was just gone, and there's just a tree there now. Huh. And yeah, again, we sort of went, you know, yeah, good time to get the hell out of here, because it was a pretty strange experience. And the whole night had a feeling of sort of unreality to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Almost like a dream, but we were all there and we all remember it. We've talked about it since, but the whole night had a strange feel.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend kicking over the mushrooms in the fairy circle. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah. He's one of my favorite people, but yeah, that night I wasn't too happy because I think he stirred something up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, could be. I mean, who knows, but it, you know, certainly feels like they're related.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, what struck me about it is that all of these both of these things happened fairly close in time to each other. That similar, that black figure, that black oily looking sort of, well, a figure that's, it doesn't just look like it's dark because it's dark. It's blacker than black.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, yeah, these all happened around the same time in not the same area, but within, you know, in the same general neck of the woods.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At that point, we were doing, as I said, quite a bit of this mucking around with the remote viewing and trying to do, the ghost hunting and that kind of thing. But at that point, I kind of abandoned the topic out of fear, to be honest. There's just too many strange things happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was getting, you know, strange things happening in my house, which didn't used to happen. Some sleep paralysis with some fairly unpleasant sort of imagery associated with it, and I kind of felt like I was inviting a lot of this into my life, so I really kind of walked away from the topic for mm-hmm. many years, and really only got back into it when I discovered your podcast and a few others that sort of reignited my interest in the topic. But for many years I didn't talk about any of this because it actually, I don't know, I kind of would get anxious and I shouldn't be talking about it. I don't know.
No, I understand.
So, yeah, it's really only been last few years I really have probably gotten interested in the topic again. But for many years, I just kind of rejected it, didn't want anything to do with it. So more recently, as I say, I abandoned the topic for many years. But more recently, there's been a few things. I should mention as well, I did have an interesting time. What's it called? Like a time... Well, you lose some time, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Where me and my partner were driving interstate across a place called the Hay Plain. We were driving past a place called Devil's Gate Station, or Hell's Gate Station.
Interesting.
It's a large, it was an interesting place. Just dead flat, saltbush country. Yeah, just for cattle and sheep grazing and whatnot. But yeah, we stopped at the gates, as everyone does at Hell's Gate Station, and takes a photo of themselves next to it, you know? And then continued on our way. But we lost probably about an hour and a half on that trip, where we left one town and we should have been getting to the next town at like 8:30, and we didn't get there till like 10 at night. And we were driving pretty much the whole time at, you know, 100 Ks an hour. And you know how long it's going to take you because it's. And, yeah, so we lost a good hour and a half, and I have no memories of anything strange happening that day, but that was, again, just from that point of view of just the odd name of the place, and then to lose time there, it just seemed a little strange.
Yeah. Did you ever look into why it's called that?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of places in Australia, the crappier places, to be honest, with names like, you know, Mount Misery and Hell's Gate. Mount Trepidation. I think just we're very literal people, you know. If a place sucks, we just call it something.
I'm just wondering, is because I think it was Franzoni, a Bigfoot researcher over here, I think he was the first guy to start pointing out that these places with devil and hell names have a disproportionate amount of supernatural activity that go along with them. And I found it to be true here. I just wonder if it's true elsewhere as well.
That's a really good point. I think I might have heard maybe an interview with on something about that on either your show or another one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I guess because when this happened was during that period when I kind of rejected the topic. So when it happened, I didn't really give it as much thought maybe as I would now, and didn't really do the research. But no, it'd be interesting to look into if there's. Other people have had interesting things happen out there.
Yeah.
I wish I had now. So I told you that we were doing the remote viewing and some experiments of that kind. That was many years ago. One of the things that the reason we did some of this stuff was that I very often able to see auras around people's shoulders and around the crowns of their heads. Mm-hmm. To the point, if somebody has an idea, I can see the sort of flare you know, if something occurs to them or if somebody's got a headache, I can kind of see like it leaks out the side, like little arc leaks out. And that as I rejected the topic and as I've moved on with my life, happens a lot less. It used to be all the time, and now it's only if I concentrate. Mm-hmm. That got us, when we were younger, we sort of were doing these remote viewing experiments. And one of the other ones that we did, I'd noticed that when I would get really agitated, I'd get this cold air start moving around my hands. And so one night I tried to cup my hands around each other about maybe the width, a little smaller than a basketball, you know, mm-hmm. and just see if I could make the whole area cold with this feeling out of my hands, right? Mm-hmm. And it works. I've shown dozens of people this.
Wow.
I can hold my hands about maybe 8 inches apart with my fingers spread, and it creates this sort of cold, roiling air, this sort of cold and damp. And I get rid of it by clapping my hands afterwards, like that, and it dissipates.
Wow.
And it's something I discovered by accident. And then because we were doing experiments in this stuff, I kind of tried to see how far I could push it, you know. It got to a point where, I could, in a matter of moments, I can do it now. I'm doing it right now.
Huh.
It just happens when I think about it, you know. And that was, again, one of the reasons I kind of rejected this stuff is that I thought, you know, we burned all the people who know about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Or they got driven underground. And I felt like there's nobody to learn from. I don't know what I'm doing here. And this could be dangerous. With all the other things that were happening in my life at the time, the strange lights, the weird figures, the temperature changes in rooms, that all the weird stuff. And with this happening as well, I was frightened. I hate to admit, and I completely pulled back from it and walked away from it. Just because I felt like there was no way to know what I was really doing and what I was messing with, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't really like talking about that because it makes me sound like a lunatic, you know?
I get it. If I were there and you did that, I could put my hand in between your hands and I would feel a temperature change.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Or something. It feels cold. It feels cold and like a cold, damp air.
Hmm. Wow.
And it's got a thickness to it. I used to do it as a party trick on occasion for when we maybe have a few drinks or a smoke, you know. I say, hey, check this out. I do it, but you know, that kind of scared me too, because I'm thinking, oh, I don't know what I'm doing here.
Yeah,
this could be bad. This could be taxing me in some way, or it could be maybe inviting attention that I don't really want.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I kind of walked away from it.
But
it's a strange thing. It's like a and if I stretch my hands out, I can kind of stretch it out a little bigger, and then I can compact it down, and it tightens up and gets colder.
Hmm.
I wish I could show you it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I could just be some crazy guy, you know. That kind of stuff was happening around the same time. That sort of late teens, mid teens to 21, I guess, was when almost all of this stuff happened. When the cold areas and the stuff like that, as I say, that still happens if I think about it, but I kind of try not to think about it because I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so apart from that, the most recent things, probably within the last year or so, once I got reinterested in this topic, I've had a couple of fairly intense sleep paralysis experiences, which I hadn't had for probably 20 years.
Yeah. What age say you are?
I'm 45 now.
45? Yeah, they tend to fall off. I mean, according to the book I read, they tend to fall off in your late mid-30s, I guess. But I still had a couple incidences of it afterwards and still do here and there, just nowhere like I did when I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. I mean, it seemed to sort of probably coincided with myself pulling away from this topic. I had a lot less of it. And it'd be many, many, many years before I had this one. Quite recently, which was quite kind of horrific, to be honest. Just I woke up lying on my side. I'm a side sleeper, so you know, open up my eyes and I look over there, and I can looking straight at the waist of somebody standing right next to my bed.
Oh wow!
Like right next to the mattress, like right there. I couldn't move. As in these situations. Eventually, I managed to move my eyes and I looked up, and whatever this figure was, its face just looked like. Have you ever seen like a close up of a large spider?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's multiple eyes and the they're so hairy with fangs and stuff, you know, mandibles and stuff. Yeah. So this thing had this face like that, and that freaked the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine so, yeah.
I couldn't move, obviously, but I eventually managed to move a finger and then my hand, and then, as happens with these things, everything went back to normal. I woke up. There's nothing in my room. But then, of course, I lay down and went back to sleep immediately, as always happens with this stuff.
Yeah. Now, was there a point of waking up, or did paralysis just stopped?
The paralysis stopped. I could feel it. I managed to move a finger and then my hand, and then I was trying to punch it, but, I mean, all I managed was to move a finger, you know?
Yeah.
As the paralysis went, the figure was gone, and I was able to move.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, this could well just be a dream.
Yeah, I mean, sleep paralysis is so weird. Like, there's such a weird element to it. And I'm not to speak for you, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but often people, there's not really a waking up period. There's just the thing is there, and then it's not there, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
You can't move, and then you can move, you know? Or you know.
It was a matter of I couldn't move, and then I could move an eye.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could see what was next to me, and then I really wanted to move. Then, yeah, as soon as I regained control of my body, it wasn't like waking up now. It was like the figure was gone and I could move. And I sort of moved. I looked around the room. There's nothing there. And then I just lay down and went back to sleep almost immediately. And, yeah, but so that was, I mean, it's not anything particularly, you know, it's not that interesting, but I guess it's a more recent thing that's happened to me.
Yeah, no, I mean, anytime someone sees an entity out of sleep paralysis, it's pretty interesting to me. So did this thing have a normal, you know, human, two arms, two legs kind of build?
Yeah, it was a normal human shape with, with like, and I'm not sure, it looked dark brown, dark colored, but I couldn't see. The room was quite dark, but for whatever reason, I could see its face.
See, I would be less disturbed at a giant spider than a humanoid figure with a spider face, I think. That's just very disturbing.
It was pretty horrific.
Yeah.
But as I say, it's, you know, these things could easily be dreams. It's
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and yet probably the only other thing that is a recent one. And again, this is one of those things that it could just be a strange coincidence or a strange evening, you know? But yeah, I was, my wife was away, at a dairy industry conference. And so I was here by myself. We manage a dairy farm on a 6,000 acre grazing property. Mm-hmm. So there's no neighbors. There's no, you know, it's a kilometer long road to get to our house from the road, like a driveway. So it's not somewhere where there's a lot of passing traffic and there's no neighbors. I was sitting in my lounge room. It would have been quite late at night, maybe 11. We have many dogs. We have 5 dogs at the time, and anybody comes within a couple of hundred meters of the house, they're going berserk, barking and making all sorts of noise, and they sleep outside in cages next to the driveway there. So I'm sitting in the lounge room, and then there's all these lights out the front, like somebody's got spotlights. So I put down my beer, I get up, I walk out to the back door, and there's a guy there in a truck, like a utility truck, with the spotlights on the top. He's a pretty rough looking guy. He comes up, doesn't shake my hand, just says, "Hi, I'm looking to do some shooting. And some shooting some rabbits. Can I come onto the farm and do some shooting?" And I said, "Look, it's not my property. I'm a manager. I'm not an owner. I can't give you permission to come onto the property." The guy then says, "Well, I know the owner, and I used to come out here and shoot. So is it okay if I come on the property and shoot?" And I said, "Look, if you know the owner, you can go and ask him yourself. If you know Malcolm, bring him. He'll give you permission if he wants. If not, yeah, but I can't give you permission." Mm-hmm. So he was really insistent. And eventually I just said, "Look, I can't help you. I'm getting back to my evening. See you later." I went back inside, and after I sat down and I realized, why didn't my dogs bark at this guy? There wasn't a noise from my dogs. I didn't hear a sound from the dogs. And they would normally, if anybody comes on my property, they're going berserk. This guy's pulled up out the front. I didn't hear him coming down the driveway either. Like, it was just like, and normally if there's somebody comes onto our driveway, it's a dirt track. Any truck rattles, you can hear it coming.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no sound. It was just suddenly there's lights out the front and a guy really insistent that I give him permission to come onto the property.
Hmm.
And a guy who the dogs didn't seem to notice that he existed.
Yeah.
And none of this struck me until after I went back inside and sat down and I thought, hey, hang on. And yeah, I went and checked on the dogs. They were all fine. They were just in the kennels doing their normal thing. Yeah, it struck me as pretty strange.
Yeah. He wasn't wearing flannel, was he?
No, I can't remember what he was wearing, to be honest. he just looked like a very, like a redneck shooter, you know, just yeah. a normal guy. Short, very lined, kind of dirty. That's all I really remember about him. But no, I think there was no flannel, but I do get where you go with that.
Wow. So but, yes, yeah. I think the permission thing is an odd detail too. Like he just very insistent about asking for permission to be on the land.
It was at least two or three times he tried to get around me on the permission. He had all these excuses. Oh, but I used to, the old share farmer who worked here used to let me. And I'm like, well, that's cool. I'm the new share farmer. I can't give you permission. You have to talk to, and then he's, oh, but I know the owner. It's like, well, go talk to the owner.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was very insistent. And again, it didn't strike me as weird that the dogs hadn't barked until I came inside. And to be honest, the permission thing didn't strike me as weird until sometime later when I was listening to a podcast. I'm not sure whether it was your show or another show, but talking about the permission thing. Mm-hmm. There being rules with these things sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's to me, that's, yeah, I'm kind of getting little chills from that just because how insistent he was for, you know, like, no, give me permission. Like, and well, I think he did the right thing. I mean,
I really think I did, man.
Whether it was a human dude or something other, I think you did the right thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, regardless, it seemed to be the right choice, but
yeah,
as I said, years later, having gotten back into the topic and realizing that connection between some of the older mythologies and permission and the vampire mythology, the fae, mm-hmm. that stuff where permissions and rules and that sort of thing are so important.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a lot of these things, I guess, over time and over the last few years of getting back into the topic and looking over my own experiences through my life and I guess kind of seeing, well, hang on, I saw every one of these things as an individual, isolated and probably different event.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I guess as I've really educated myself on the topic and gotten back into it, I'm kind of thinking there's more crossover with some of these things than I'd originally thought when I was younger.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the natural way through this stuff, I think. I think everybody starts out that way. It's all unrelated. Yeah. And then after a while, you sort of, well, it certainly seems to be related. And then
yeah,
I've gotten to the point where it's like, I really can't see it as separate anymore.
Yeah. More and more, I feel like it's the same, you know, the same thing that this is maybe one phenomenon that manifests differently depending on your cultural background, your own personal psychology, what you're expecting to see. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these things are, if not the same, they're in the same ballpark.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And a lot of it, yeah, comes down to your expectations of what you expect to see, perhaps, or what culturally is normal for you, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you're only maybe the first or the second Australian that's been on Strange Familiars. So
right.
I would be failing to ask, and this might be a very kind of goofy question, but do you ever hear anybody that had any Yowie stories there?
Yeah, but the guy was, he's dead now, so I can be a little more honest than I would, but he took a hell of a lot of magic mushrooms when he was young.
Okay.
I'm not sure I would trust his perceptions, to be honest. But yeah, he had a few stories that to be honest, I didn't take too seriously because he was kind of out there, you know?
Yeah. Is it something that gets, like, so culturally Bigfoot is huge here. Is it similar there? Does the Yowie get, you sort of have that cultural?
Look, there are people who are into it, but it's probably the more common cryptid thing that you would hear here are the big cats.
Ah, okay.
That's a pretty common one in South Australia and in Victoria. And there's always the mythology that goes with it. You know, a US Army Marines unit that was stationed here in World War II, and they had a unit or regimental cat that was like their standard, you know, mm-hmm. and escaped from captivity. There's always some bull, you know. there are no cats here, man, but people see them all the time. So,
right.
But that's probably the more common one. Yeah, the Yowie thing, I think, is... There's a few people into it, but I've not really given it much attention, and you know, South Australia is probably the most heavily cleared area of vegetation in the country. So there's not a whole lot of space out here for things to hide.
Right.
I mean, Tasmania, maybe, you know, there's a lot of forest there, a lot of very rough country, but it's not something that people really are that big into. A lot of you hear about, you know, UFO sightings and ghosts and things like that, but I guess it's made culturally not such a thing here either.
All right, so I have to ask you the pancake question. On the morning of April 18th, 1961, Joe Simonton saw a silver disc on his farm. He went out, investigated, and actually stepped aboard the craft. He encountered three dark-skinned humanoids who handed him an empty jug. Joe filled it with water and brought it back to them. In return, they gave him some pancakes. Would you eat the pancakes?
Hell no. Absolutely not. I wouldn't have stepped on the craft in the first place.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
Let's say I did. There's no way. No way.
Yeah, I like it was a couple guests ago who said she would just invite them back to her place for pancakes. You want pancakes? Come on, I'll make you pancakes. I like that answer best, I think.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
I like that.
All right, Duncan, thanks for sharing your stories.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time.
If you like Strange Familiars and you'd like to support us and help us make the show, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. All of our patrons get commercial-free versions of the weekly shows, plus full extra episodes every month. We promise at least one. Sometimes we do more than one. Those are full episodes of Strange Familiars. To see all the different tiers of support, you can go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's also an option on Apple Podcasts. It's called Patron of the Strange. I'd like to thank all the patrons wherever you're signed up for helping us with the show. Couldn't do it without you. All right, so I dug up some articles about some ghosts in black, just a few little articles. And I only looked in Pennsylvania just because I'd had to narrow the search somehow.
Yeah.
Though searches in Pennsylvania will turn up articles in Pennsylvania newspapers, but they could be from
other places. Yeah.
So there's an article from Indiana in there, I think.
Yep.
These are ghosts in black.
Okay. The first one is from Newcastle, Indiana, but it appeared in the Bucks County Gazette in Bristol, Pennsylvania. That's near Philadelphia. And it's called Newcastle's Black Ghost.
What year?
1890. Newcastle's Black Ghost. The east end of Newcastle is all torn up over the appearance of a ghost, which has been seen strolling about the schoolhouse grounds for several nights recently. The mysterious stranger has not had the boldness to speak to anyone as of yet, but on the contrary seems shy, yet the small boys in that vicinity, who have to run errands after dark, have begun to consider life a dismal failure, and threaten to run off with the first circus or trained bear that comes along. His, her, or its ghostship, as the case may be, is remarkable in being coal black in color, instead of the conventional white. The only other mark of recognition it bears is a huge dagger, sunk to the hilt in its bosom, and a stream of fiery blood issuing from the wound. The town council may draft about 100 brave men to capture the mystery. I always like the casual way it's like, well, the only other mark is that there's a huge dagger and streams blood from the wound.
Striking visual, though.
Yeah, like this, like sort of like ghostly black apparition with the dagger
and a like bright blood coming out of it.
It's very Shakespearean.
It reminds me of just the dagger part over at Chickie's Rock in the, I think it was in the 50s. People were seeing this huge apparition. It was like wrapped up in like a mummy.
Mm-hmm.
And it had daggers coming out of its head.
But and more was, than one person saw the same thing like
I
that?
I think so. Like, and it was about like 12 feet tall or something. It was really weird. And then years later, there was a newspaper article I found.
Mm-hmm.
So this was in like one of the ghost story books from Lancaster County. And mm-hmm. this was like they were talking to a woman who said, you know, this was back in whatever. It might have been in the early 60s or something. But then in the late 60s, it was this like ghost mania kind of thing happened at Chickie's Rock. And people were going up there every night to see stuff. And it was actually like getting so bad that the cops were directing traffic and stuff. And, you know, no internet back then, not a lot of TV.
Yeah.
And
in our area, people would ride the circuit. They'd just ride around in a particular circle around in their city.
But one of the kids that went up there, like a teenage boy, and this is years later, reported seeing a giant thing with things coming out of its head there. Like, it's really just odd, like how it just matched up, you know, years later. I saw one beyond the Seventh Gate. It's been a while since I looked over those sightings, but interesting. All right, what do we have next?
This is from 1900, so just 10 years later, from the Potter Enterprise, which I assume is from Potter County?
One would think, yeah.
That's God's country, if I know my Pennsylvania lore correctly. So this is entitled Catching Ghosts, Spooks of Different Colors and Varying Degrees of Intangibility. The hundreds of ghosts being annually brought to light in the dragnets of scientific spook catchers conform to no general rules as to the appearance or behavior. Ghostland must, in truth, be a realm of spicy variety and absolute independence.
Spicy.
Yes. A well-known psychic researcher has lately given the writer access to his voluminous records of 1,000 or more of the most vivid phantoms experienced here and abroad within the past 10 years. Among their number are the most respectable and best authenticated shades haunting our sphere during this fin de siècle decade. Gray rather than black or white appears to be the prevailing color worn by these latter-day ghosts, says the Washington Star. Two houses, one in England and the other in Ireland, are persistently haunted by what are called gray ladies. The Irish spook of this category recently stood in front of a bust of Shakespeare, hidden by her form. A pair of shoes thrown at her opaque substance penetrated it completely and crashed against the marble bust. A third gray ghost haunting the ancient dormitory of an English college is, on the other hand, transparent, and the panels of windows can be seen through its form. A fourth gray ghost appears as a shadow, singularly distinct and showing all of the lines and features of a human being. Still another spook, that of Colonel Avmeander, seen in St. Petersburg, is a gray shadow. In fact, there are too many gray ghosts for enumeration. The sheeted dead appear to be in a small minority nowadays. Even black ghosts seem to outnumber them. The black shade of an ancient clergyman often seen in daylight upon an English country road sometimes wears a white film of vapor enveloping his sable raiment. The phantom of another clergyman seen in church is described as a black clear mist with the outline of a man. That of a little old woman in brown has long haunted the front yard of a certain cottage, while that of an old lady in green bothers a minister of the gospel. Many ghosts are peculiarly luminous. One is especially so when the moon shines on it. Blue lights have been often seen after dark along the country haunts of a daylight ghost of black hue. Blue light surrounded also the ghost of a dead parent who came to inform his daughter that she had lost a favorite aunt. The spook of a dead friend appearing to another woman illuminated her apartment at night until it was bright as day. Modern specters differ quite as widely as their substance. Many are vaporous and intangible. Others can be distinctly felt, and some are so heavy that they can weigh their victims down. Others are so filmy that objects can pass through them. That of an old woman is of a semi-transparent, ethereal nature. It is passed in a narrow passage without being felt as it brushes by. A woman who saw the spook of a man sitting in a chair attempted to sit in its lap, but she penetrated it completely, and the specter of a friend haunting a gentleman while the latter was driving home alone in his gig caused this dark shadow to envelop him as it bent over him one evening. Then again, there are some phantoms which take forms other than human. A misty pillar frequents a lane in one locality. Fishermen in another place look for the body of a drowned companion that they saw in woods near by a sort of cloud, whence issued a voice directing them to a spot where they afterward found the corpse. Another ghost, taking the shape of a bright ball of light, palish blue, was seen by a woman when she entered her bedroom in the darkness. Hanging between her and the ceiling, it emitted no rays, and the remainder of the room was dark. As she left the room, it remained, but when she returned, it was gone. Haunted people experience various sensations while touching ghosts. The rough clothing of an invisible spook is felt to brush against the skin of one young woman, and another specter had an icy hand when grasped by a terrified woman. One woman, on going upstairs at night, saw a tall man directly in front of her. Recognizing him as a dear friend, she reached out to touch him, but her hand simply penetrated space. Later, she received word from India that the friend had died on the very date of the experience. And another woman who seized a ghost in her room says that it felt sort of like flimsy drapery, and it seemed to be dragged from her by some invisible power as it sank into the floor by her bedside. One ghost is accompanied by a wave of cold air which chills those who draw near it, and another is apparently warm, and on very hot nights, he is seen to mop his face with a handkerchief. A spook which lay down by a friend in bed placed its frozen lips against her cheek. That some phantoms have appreciable weight is perhaps indicated by the case of a certain woman visited by the shades of two dead friends. They appeared behind her while she was seated at her tea table, and leaning upon her shoulders rendered her immovable. She was unaware of what had happened until her daughter across the table cried out and gave the names of the intruders. The majority of ghosts simply vanish like breath into the wind. Others make their exits through bolted doors, slamming them loudly. Many of these doors are seen to open, but later proved to be securely locked on the inside. Numerous spooks have a habit of vanishing as soon as spoken to. One which haunts a lonely roadway fades away in broad daylight, and in the presence of several witnesses, closing upon it from in front and behind.
I wish they would give more locations, more details of these cases. I believe they're talking about, you know, things that this person has read about or something, you know. But
yeah, they're just sort of cherry-picking the color part of it, and then all the context is entirely gone, and that's the interesting part.
Yes, oh, we could do stories about each one of those.
A rainbow of ghosts.
All right, we got one last article concerning black ghost.
This is from the Harrisburg Telegraph, but it concerns the black-robed ghost that haunts an Illinois town.
And this is from 1902, right?
Heading into the Midwest. The good people of Bushnell, Illinois, have been much disturbed of late by a ghost which appears in the form of a woman. She usually presents herself to human view robed in deepest mourning. Only once has she been seen in white, and then in what appeared to be material of a flowing texture. On all other occasions, she has shown herself in long black robes and a mourning veil over her face. She does not seem to confine herself to any particular place, but has been seen on different streets and at all hours of the night. She suddenly appears before the belated citizen in a noiseless manner, and as suddenly disappears. On two or three occasions, she has been given chase, and the frightened individuals declare it with only the fleetest running that they have been able to keep out of her way. And on one occasion, an attempt was made to capture the spirit, but after a chase of several squares, she suddenly disappeared from view, and further chase was abandoned. Many stories are rife as to the true nature of the apparition. Many superstitious persons believe it to be the spirit of a woman who died recently after months of great suffering, and that her spirit has returned to harass the city. It has resulted in keeping a great many children off the streets after dark, and a few older ones, too. Perhaps that story was concocted to do just that.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, because it does, if you remember the Springheel Jack series we did, it kind of feels like some of the Springheel Jack articles, you know, like people were chasing it, and it just, you know, they could see it. It was running from them, and then it was just gone.
Yeah, and it reminds me of the Long Black Veil song, you know.
Oh, yeah.
She's sort of the queen of the proto-goth ghosts.
Yeah, in mourning would specifically refer to at that time, like a long black dress. And
yeah, but like we're already to 1902, so she almost seems like a relic of another era.
Yeah, yeah. When does Edwardian kick in?
We're there. We've just started the Edwardian era.
Mm, okay. Well, I'm sure people still dressed in mourning, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Fashion didn't change that quick back then, you know.
Probably. No, and we still dress in black for,
certainly.
In the Western world.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. People would have been familiar enough with the term back then, you know.
Yeah. It seems sad to me that you'd have to do, like, I would think once you died, you could stop mourning other people. Like, you'd be on a level playing field, right?
But if you see some of these pictures as mourning gear, it can be very spooky looking. You know, it definitely has a somber appeal.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very frightening.
Yeah. So I'll dig in and I'll look up some more ghosts in black, and maybe we can turn up something. One of those things you were talking about almost sounded like a blacker than black kind of thing. One of those instances.
Yeah, it did. Article. Yeah. But I mean, the one with like the wound with that kind of sounded like a spooky like you wouldn't even know it was necessarily a human form, except for the fact that it had a bleeding wound and a...
Yeah, but I'll keep looking, and maybe we can turn up some articles with something that describes more like these blacker-than-black forms that people are talking about. Well, you've spread yourself too thin, Allison.
Why's that?
With an antique store in Hanover, inside Black Rose, and one in Columbia, inside State Theater Vintage Emporium. You've brought no Curiosity of the Week here.
No, I didn't. We'll let the curiosity build till next week.
There you go. The truth is, we just didn't have time. We're doing this literally at the last minute. I've been editing all day, and
if you would know how close this is to the time you hear it, you can almost hear an exhale of breath, and it's the same one that you...
we're very close.
Very close.
To the time. So we will come back next week with a Curiosity of the Week. Until then, you can check out our Etsy shop. Our shop name is Lost Grave, but if you type in Strange Familiars, you should see our stuff come up. Links to our Etsy shop are in the show notes. That's where you can find Strange Familiars t-shirts, stickers, mugs, patches. You can find my artwork there. Copies of my books, if you get them from Etsy, they come signed. Allison has old photos up there. We have past Curiosities of the Week, those that haven't sold yet, that are all up there in our Etsy shop. If you purchase from us on Etsy, it also helps support the show. That's a big help as well. Once again, our shop name is Lost Grave there. It's one word, but you can type in Strange Familiars, you can type in Lost Grave. You should see our stuff come up either way. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back soon with more Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. For Strange Familiars merch, go to strangefamiliars.com/merch. That's where you can find pictures of shirts and mugs and everything we have. You can click on them. It'll take you right to a place to purchase them. We're on Facebook, where you can join the Strange Familiars gathering group there as well. We're on Instagram, @strangefamiliars, one word, no underscores. And you can find us on the web at strangefamiliars.com. Thank you.
Stars ride in the